Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Hey.
I mean, we can just do that, but there were a number of very chashuv ha'aras that people sent in, which I think it would be chashuv to discuss.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So, first of all, Moshe Handel pointed out the stress on the idea of echad. And the yichud of the shevet, this ties in with the medrash that I posted. I put it on the site. I also put it on the document at the end, where the nature of echad is stressed in the medrash that it's a similarity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just plain echad. It's echad because he's deime to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says Shema Yisrael, Shema Kano, Shema Echad. We find the same thing by Avram Avinu, Echad Avraham. We find the same thing by Klal Yisrael, Mikam Pcha Yisrael, Goy Echad Ba'aretz. We find by Avimelech, Shechav Echad Am, because he was a melech. By Elkanah, it says, Yishechad, Afishaya, Lo Haya B'doro, Kiyotzebo. So that means that there's something special about the Manoach, in terms of the Echad also, which relates to the craziest thing, which is that the Medrash brings that Kol Makom Shenemar Vayi, it's always the Lashon of Tzar. So it goes through all the classical Vayis, and then it says that here it says Vayi Eshechad, Eshechad Mitzora, and what's the Vayi? Vayoma Manoch Avishto Mot Namut. That was the thing that we were saying, like, that doesn't make any sense at all. Why do you say that? So how in the world could we introduce that with Vayi? What's more, the interrelationship with the Malach also takes on a completely different texture when it comes to this Medrash, because the Medrash understands that Slalfonit is called Slalfonit because wherever a Malach appears, it's Betzel. So Betzel Korati that we find by Lot and by Avram and this Tzel is the reason that the Malach comes to her as the Tzalal, because she was the Makor of the Regias of the Malach. It's like, and then, you know, the last thing we did last week was we pointed out that it's she who says the question that Barnea had pointed, which was, what is the meaning of all of this stuff that we're being shown? What's the purpose of it, Bichlal? What does it mean? And then when we examine the Gidon relationships, all of these things that we've spoken about, that Moshe Andel also made a lot of it throughout, the Plagish Megiva issues and going back to various things that we saw before. I mean, we've seen this whole pattern of things that are just, they're sort of like just strange, in which they are references to like things that don't appear to be very important to us. And somehow or other, they're very important to the narrative, very important to the story. And when I say it's not important to us, it's like, really, in a sense, we have no idea what's going on. It's like the people don't seem real. They don't seem to relate to any of the structures that we're used to. And I think there's no question that that's goof of the point, right? In other words, the idea of the Leich B'Kochach HaZeh and the taking a look at the perspective of Yitzias Mitzrayim and the Nisim of the Midbar and so on from the Dorot of the Nichnasim La'aretz, or the issues that came to the fore at the very beginning, and how different they are. We were talking about the Echad, Hoya Avram. We were talking about the Echad over here. The whole idea of this guy being, this Shimshon, being just completely outside of all social context and all, obviously, because of the way that it had to be done to keep Yisrael out of it, and that this would be something that he did. We was thinking, you know that the Glorious Bastards movie, where over there you get this idea of that we need to create this vision of the Jew who has some kind of insane capabilities. Or we used to happen to the Nazis in the U.S. when the Nazis were marching in the U.S. before the war. They were constantly attacked by these Jewish hooligans who would beat them up in their marches in New York. There's a lot of stories like that. And I'm thinking that the focus that we have of Klal Yisrael in this time, in the time where we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, rather than looking forward to establishing a Beis HaMikdash, to us, everything is a focus of reestablishing. And everything is ex post facto. In other words, we've sort of settled on this kind of vision that we have about what it means, despite the fact that as we get closer to establishing a Beis HaMikdash, we get closer to a Shimshon paradigm than we do to a religious paradigm, right? I don't believe that's coincidental. In other words, what we're examining over here, and the reason that it seems so foreign to us, is that this childhood of Yisrael has to mean that on the level of one-to-one, so to speak, in other words, you're taking, and that's, I think, the meaning of this idea of the Echad in the Medrash. You're on a level of one-to-one, and you're measuring the Umais vis-a-vis Yisrael, and the nature of Avodah Zarah vis-a-vis Emunah B'Hashem. Now, that whole idea in terms of Avram Avinu was not that he was different than everybody else across the board. It was that this emuna in Hashem, as opposed to Avodah Zarah, created a completely different set of values that would come out in very subtle ways in all of his interrelationships with the Umays. It wasn't that he was, that they would look at him as, oh, this guy is not human in the regular way that we are. It's that everything that he's doing is being done on a different plane, but he's doing the things that we're doing. The original Knesset, in which everything is focused in terms of the Gvura, the Milchama, the ability to fight the Laman Alev Melachim, and the way that we need to relate to all of them as if we are the Yisrael of the Umais against which they are the Mispar B'nai Yisrael. We miss out on that whole idea because the way that we look at ourselves is that we're not fundamentally competitive with the Umais Ha'olam. We're the Uma Yechida, in which the kind of, and this has been a disaster, in which supposedly the kind of things that we're doing, the belief now is that, you know, okay, the kind of things that we're doing is we're learning Torah and we're doing mitzvahs. When it comes to the competition, so to speak, to the Havdola, Ben Yisrael Amim, we screw up royally. Because when we get into business, we're the same rotten liars that they are. In so many areas, we're bichlal not competitive. We don't attempt even a competition. And the competition that occurs always puts us on the same level as them. So if you want to know who's behind all the pornography, it'll be the Hasidim. I mean, this is competition. The point is that we don't have any real place of contact in which what we do is the Metzias of Yisrael. So we've pulled out of the competition. We don't have any sexual competition with them. As far as we're concerned, we don't have sex. It doesn't exist. The whole point of this Gvura and the whole point of this Vayevorchei Hashem and the whole point of a Nazir who is Bedafka, not supposed to be the regular view that we have of Nazirim, of being Kaddish in a sense of out of it, and actually being punished for being out of it, and you know, it's Ein Zu Derech Teva, and so on. Over here, we Bedafka have the creation of the weirdest thing, which is the Nazir who's into it. I understand that we can justify it by saying that since he was given these kind of keches, So he requires Naziris. But that's not what the Pashtus is. The Pashtus is that the Malach is saying not that we need to provide him with extra protection, but that his Metzius is a new type of Naziris, which, of course, is part of the whole sugya in the Gemara. I'm just suggesting that Yisrael has to begin as a non-religious entity. They're not confronting the Umayyad Ha'olam in terms of their religion. It's not a discussion in which we're going to debate the Pope about whether Yoshke is God or there's really a Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh that refers to God. That's not what we're doing. We are being what it means to be an Adam who is, like the Medrash says about Shimshon, and that's Merumas in Sheit, that there were six people, Sheit in Aramaic, there were six people that were created the Dugma of Adam Arishai, and that ultimately what we are trying to do is to show what is Adam. That's the Adam Aten. Obviously, the Adam is going to be Shayach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is going to be Shayach to Aveda, is going to... He's certainly not going to be religious. That's ridiculous. It's the last thing that he'll be. Because, I mean, he's in direct contact with the world as a Kadosh Baruch Hu's agent. He views it. I mean, it's insane to be religious. It would be a complete violation of what it means to be an Adam. So what happens to us post-Churban is so fundamentally different that when we take a look at Shoftim, what we need to look at is what it means from the point of view, if it's to be really meaningful for us. It's like Stam Alimut. It's a raw confrontation with the primal elements of the Adam, which is Yisrael. And because of that, in the same way that Gan Eden is primitive, stripped down, presented in its most simplistic Gan Eden for dummies, and Adam as an Adam for dummies, what is the human condition for dummies? And you tell them a child's story, which then you could spend the rest of your life exploring. The same thing is true of this certain stripped down rawness that we meet in Shoftim, in which the reason that this is Nitzrich Aladeiris is because we really need to meet these people. They are central in the sense of what are we? What is the condition of being Yisrael? And as long as Shimshon appears weird, then that means we are not really learning Shoftim. We're learning about Shimshon, but we're not meeting Shimshon. There's no question that if you met Shimshon, in the same way that you meet any Godel, and here, I mean, we're talking about someone whose father is called an Amoritz, is considered to be Echad Haya Avram. I mean, that's unbelievable in this Medrash. So that means that in the same way that you would be impacted by what it is that you see that a person attains and what it would be to live that kind of life, when you meet Shimshon, you would be impacted in the same way as Yaakov Avinu was impacted. If Yaakov Avinu was looking, hey, boss man, you're looking like you're bored, damn it.
No.
I'm heavy duty.
I was concentrating.
No. I see Barnea concentrating like that. And you know what happens? His eyes gradually.
Yeah, no. I actually was getting in the zone. You were really concentrating.
That's my excuse, and you're Chayit.
Yeah, I'm getting it. I focused. Okay.
It's all right. Barnea was already Neitel, the Enesh of Kol HaDeres on his show. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay. I've got to get back. Okay, where were we?
Kvarbo Barnea Upotars Kol HaDeres.
For those of you who weren't in the room, we one time tied firecrackers to Shlomo's tzitzis, and he moved, and he opened his eyes for a moment and went back to sleep. Maybe Ida was in the room. I'm not sure if anybody else was there.
Really?
Those were all, good old days.
But maybe that's why Shlomo got so attracted to tying fires to the tails of Shualim.
Yeah.
It could Shimshon, be. It's no coincidence. This is part of a whole childhood experience.
Alex,
anyway, but I'm just saying that what these stories are meant to be is not like the way that we're learning about them. It's actually confronting what it is that, what is this man? Like, what is he saying to us, Bichlal? The stories that we read here, which like smack bang in the middle, we end up with Vahu Shafet as Yisrael, as Reb Shana, before we even get back to the end of the story, right? So it's trying to tell us something about how this narrative about all these crazy things are directly related to the Vahu Shafat. So in other words, what happens? The vision that we have is, you know, okay, under normal circumstances, you walk into the Beis HaMedrash and there's Shimshon wearing his tzitzis and his tefillin and the Gra, and people are presenting shilas to him and he's telling what to do. Then at night, he tears off his shirt. He's got a Superman outfit underneath it. And then he starts going after the girls in the police team. And they're like, what is this? Right? I was just like, is this a completely split personality? Obviously not. In other words, the fact that all of this is not part of normal activity, it still has to be what it is that he was as a shofet. And the same thing with all of these other stories. They seem to be so completely off the wall that they're like, they're side issues in history, which is ridiculous. It can't be that Shoftim is presenting us with black swans all the time. Somehow or other, these are fundamental structures that are not crazy. They are basic. So in the same way that a human being stripped to very basic things comes out being very Freudian and being crazy and being a mishugana, relating to them, to the nachash and so on and so forth, right? All of these things are innate in the human condition. In the same way, in Klal Yisrael's growth, it also can only be a growth when it's predicated on the fullness of understanding what it is to be Adam as a true Adam who is Yisrael. And without it, which it's almost impossible not to get caught up in religion. And once you get caught up in religion, you lose completely all contact with Eretz Yisrael. Because it has nothing to do with the humanity and the earth and everything that you're doing. That's why Shoftim as the Yerusha Sa'aretz Sefer is going to be so much a function of human failure or human success, but it's completely and totally stripped down human because Eretz Yisrael is completely and totally stripped down human. You can't relate to it as coming into Be'erish Eretz Yisrael with a Badat Sechsher. That's ridiculous.
We had Kahana was like that. So why did he die?
What do we have?
We had Meir Kahana. I would say that's the most
political.
Similar. But it's not political. He was exactly the kind of person Rebbe is describing right now.
Okay, and Ochinami, to whatever extent that there was Gvura, but the Gvura was a Gvura that was strange. Not strange in the way that Shimshon is, but strange strange in its lack of balance of being able to allow other people to understand it.
No one understands Shimshon. I mean, that's the same way.
No one understands Shimshon. What do you think the reaction was to having Shimshon as your shofet for all of those years? In other words, when it says, Hu yachel Oshias Yisrael, does that mean only because of the impact that he had on the Plishtim? Or does it mean that that's what it takes to be able to be Moshe Yisrael? And if Kahana is Shimshon, so Zion, what's the big deal?
I'm just saying, when you met him in Shul, he was a regular guy. I mean, everybody knows. When you met Kahana in Shul, he would daven mincha the same way. He'd be just a regular guy standing around. And a nice guy, very, very nice, you know, nice person. But I'm saying, is that what we're looking for? Because that's how you would have, maybe how you look at Shimshon. I don't know.
No, because when you take a look at Shimshon, the elements of him that are the shofet, we're talking about the shofet, the elements of him that are the shofet cannot be disconnected from his insane brachas over here It can't be disconnected from the way in which he goes after Plishtim women. All of that.
What do we even know about him as a shofet from Chazal? Is there anything?
I don't think that we know anything much about him. But
what about Avi Melech? What about Avi Melech? Avi Melech was a shofet as well. And he was a murderer. I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, it's a little bit much to say.
He wasn't a shofet. He was a leader, but he wasn't a shofet.
He was a shofet. He's one of the shoftim. He's listed.
No, I don't think so. Well, doesn't have no shofat as Yisrael, does it?
There's no shofat. I think he's, isn't he listed? I'm always under the impression that he's
one of the Yud Beis shoftim.
Question. Maybe there is an answer to this, or maybe we can provide one. What Yehoshua we know was Kibush and Chiluk Ha'aretz. And Shoftim does not describe really a consolidation of the people to under a malucha, but whatever it's, I'm just trying to frame the Rebbe's question. Maybe what does the whole tkufa of Shoftim add? Maybe there's a classical answer to that, but there's no what is the?
But hasn't that been what we've been discussing all along?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm just saying
that it's a breakdown. Like, you know, there's the childhood element of Am Yisrael where they're so provided for by a centralized leadership. But that centralized leadership is not sustainable for a nation that is developing organically on its own, and that requires everyone, you know, to your corners or to your houses and to your vineyards so that you can concentrate on who you are, so that you can strengthen who you are as an individual, when the federation will then be united in time over the span of all those hundreds of years of adolescent development.
Wow.
Then they can, you know, consolidate.
I guess you could say it makes sense that they needed individual development. And so in retrospect,
the Medrash stresses that every Shevet had to have the opportunity for its self-expression in the Shofet, right? In coming up with the Shofet.
The Karta Atlas is a very nice map of each Shofet.
By the way, this issue of Shlomo is really a Machlokas Rishonim. About whether Abimelech, we list him among the Shoftim, we don't list him among the Shoftim. So the Radak lists him among the Shoftim. So that whole list of 12 Shoftim includes him. But so what are you saying then, the Tamar?
I'm saying it. I forgot. What I'm saying is that you know, he didn't look. Meaning, the question was: Did Shimshon look normal? Right?
No, that was not the question. I never raised such a question. I didn't.
No, I'm not. I'm saying when you saw him, he acted as a shofet. He acted the way he's supposed to, and that's not a contradiction to how he acted when he was on his.
I'm saying that the very fact that the Torah insists on putting Vehushafat in the middle of the stories. Besides at the end, is telling you that is not true. That Shimshon, qua Shimshon, was expressive, bedafka, of that style of Mishpat, and that's what Yisrael needed. That's what they had to meet, and they had to understand that is part of what it is to be Jewish. And the very rejection, Jewish, I hate that word, to be Yisrael, and the very rejection today of even the interest in learning about it, is just an indication of how distant and how far we've sunk from what it is to be. We don't even care what it is to be Israel. We only care about our religion.
Except this chabura.
I mean, halavai, we care about our religion. I mean, basically, we care about our ethnic considerations and our social pressures.
The expression yiftach b'dzaro kishmo b'dzaro has just taken on a whole new meaning for me, because essentially, it's not a saying of, if I had always learned it as, well, the period, because I learned it in Beis Yaakov. So what does that mean? The period of the Shoftim was a b'diavad period. And it was like, okay, the nation didn't deserve a leader like Shmuel. But no, that the Yiftach was the perfect leader for that generation, in the same way that my adolescent cannot have the leader that I look to and revere as a leader, because he has a need for a different leader. And just to me, I guess maybe because I'm parenting so many adolescents right now, B'liayin Hara, it just, this sefer just hits really strong with what Rebbe just said. Klal Yisrael's growth had to be predicated on the fullness of what it means to be a full human, that Am Yisrael has, just as Am Yisrael has to experience all of Galut, as Rabbi pointed out in the Hanukkah patterns in time, in order to incorporate the entirety of the world's experience into our experience. So we need to have the absolute strangest, weirdest shofet, and it made sense for them. And to a certain degree, it makes sense for me now. If we're also, as an Am, experiencing that shoftim tkufa as we see to Malchut,
I agree. Listen, let me bring you an example. Okay, the Gemara talks about the story of Abaye with the Kol HaGadol Mimenu Yitzro Gadol, right? Kol HaGadol Mechavero Yitzro Gadol Mimenu, and therefore Abaye was miserable because he says, "Well, I certainly would have slept with that girl," and Rabbi Yehuda had to tell him, "You shouldn't be so upset. On the contrary, let me ask you something: is there any chance in the world that Rav Kanievsky would have slept with that girl? That Rav Moshe Feinstein would have slept with that girl? That he would have considered sleeping with that girl? Is there a reason why you would not trust your daughter with Rav Kanievsky? B'yichud."
If someone asked me that in Daf Yomi.
Okay.
But yes, it's a legitimate question.
It's a very legitimate question. Now, if you incorporated Shimshon, so then of course you would be choshed him of sleeping with the girl. But we've rejected Shimshon. I'm saying this is just an example, but the point is that we're no longer talking about people. We're talking about the people where the whole point is a level of the zeros in which the Kedusha takes you out of the world. And here we're creating a level of the zeros in which you act like a sex maniac. How is that consistent with the zeros? I'm saying it must be Bedavka consistent with the zeros, not also consistent with the zeros. So we're trying to establish that higher dargas are Bedavka dargas that will expose more of the human within the context of Yisrael, and therefore will require greater kind of tikkunim, greater types of kashashas. What?
I was just going to say, it sounds like the exact opposite of religion. The religion, a religion that reveres as its gedolim the near ascetic, the trajectory of the Mesilat Yesharim towards full Purusha, and that is why so many and still today, if I didn't learn half of Shoftim because it was considered pasnished, alachad kam v'kama. My friend's children in Beis Yaakov are not learning Shoftim at all. They'll just switch. They'll go straight to Shmuel because the stories of Shmuel and Elkanah are just so much more palatable.
But then they have to stop because the rest of the stories aren't palatable. And the Tanakh cannot be learned religiously. I mean, if we're talking about Nevi'im Rishonim, that's part of the incredible contrast of Nevi'im Rishonim and Nevi'im Achronim. Nevi'im Achronim start sounding religious. They keep repeating religious themes. They may use vulgar language and they may use vulgar metaphors and so on, but at least they sound religious. The things that they talk about are not violations of the way that we usually think about how to do things.
I've heard all of Nevi'im Rishonim be related as one long moral story, basically Pirkei Avos. And you know, like, no, I'm serious. I'm saying it's not by a bad guy, but I'm saying it and bringing down Midrashim too, but learning the whole thing. And you see Avodah Zarah is bad. You see, you should be an Anav. You know, basically that's the message of Tanakh. So it's
yeah, but that's because
even though Tanakh's not like that, you can find. You can learn it up like that.
Because you're looking for messages, and I'm suggesting right. That you need to meet the people. It's not a book about being moral primers. It's a book about people and your identity. And the closer you get to meeting the people in Tanakh, by the way, it's true in the Gemara also. I mean, the Yerushalmi says, if you haven't met Ula, you shouldn't be quoting Ula. You're an amazing, you know Ula? No, but so how are you quoting someone you don't know? Obviously, when we say that, we mean you do, not that you need to know personally, but you need to know as a person. And the Gemara goes out of its way to present all of these people as a person. Everyone of the leading Tanoim and Amoraim have a crazy personality that the Gemara goes out of its way to bring out. Why is that? Because you need to know them as people in order to be able that they should be your shofet, so to speak, or that they should be the person that you're able to quote Torah from. It's not a question of this sterilized information that you're going to be using. It's part of the struggle of the human struggle. Why do we need to know Moshe Rabbeinu's failures? Why can't he just tell us over the dinim? Because that's what it means to have a teras Moshe, as we were talking about this year in terms of Lag BaOmer and understanding Rabbi Akiva and why we have that whole business. It's only because of the Ziknasai versus the Yaldusai and the nature of a life and the life of discovery and so on. There's this deep goyishe religious aspect to everything that we learn. And it's very hard to escape it, and I see we're doing the same thing when we learn shoftim. We keep looking for messages, but on a broader level. I'm saying maybe that it's the whole approach won't allow us to get anywhere because we're doing that. He has to make sense to us as a person. You know, and this is what the Maharal does. And Maharal talks about Shimshon. He says the most outrageous things. I mean, like, what does he come off talking about Shimshon? Why is Shimshon sleeping with Goyish women? What was the crazy Maharal? What he says is, well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't he be sleeping with Goyish women? Every male always seeks to increase the reach of his sperm. So if a guy is blessed with all of this sperm, where's he going to put it all? What? And therefore, the further away it is from the norm, the more he wants to be covetous. So big deal to have some domesticated Jewish woman. That is nothing. Right? It's a completely human. He's talking about kol zachar. He's talking about what it means to be a human male. What does that have to do with Shimshon? He's taking it for granted that that's the point. But that's the only point. So what does this primal prime male, how does he act if he's Yisrael? Not just Yisrael, but the Adam Arishan version of Yisrael. The Adam Atem of Yisrael. And it's not coincidental that he was from that Kayach of Adam. I don't know what to do with that. I'm just saying that we have to be careful that we don't make the same mistake in looking at it from the wrong point of view. Just the minor psychological correction in your mind. Do it now to yourself and you'll see that the whole perspective changes. It doesn't mean you have any answers, but the perspective of what you're looking for when you're nigash to the Aveda of understanding it, it's totally different. It could be that we'll be zeicher that way to have a better understanding also. So it also allows for a much more holistic understanding, because like this, we're bedayik in this, we're bedayik in this. What is this man? What is it like to be Shimshon? The classic consciousness question. What is it like to be a Shimshon?
I would note also that Rebbe says it's to meet him, because it's different than to study him. And I think that Rabbi Steinsaltz Tzatzal, he published a book on psychological characterizations of people in Tanakh. And I didn't read
who the did book. Who did this?
Rabbi Steinsaltz, Rav Steinsaltz.
Oh, Rav Steinsaltz. Yeah.
But I'm saying what he goes into there is more of a psychological description,
that's like
which is not to meet
orthodoxy.
Someone necessarily.
That's not.
You mean biblical images? That book?
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Anyways, yeah. But I'm distinguishing.
I'm not saying there's nothing useful about it, but
no, there are certain things. But he is very different. He is kind of different. I mean, he tried, is what I'm saying.
One more thing, just based on what Tamar said about the individuality. So the Gemara that says that there was a shofet from every shevet. So it was almost kind of exhausting. Maybe we said this before somewhere, maybe a long time ago.
But we just exhausting. Said it today.
You didn't say over this. Yeah,
I see Barnea left the chair, so somebody has to fall into a Barnea warp.
A shofet from every shevet, we said?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Oh, gosh.
No, but it answers on Shimshon. It just that he was being ultra don. He was being very expressive of whatever we were saying in don, and that's part of maybe you see it in Micha. You know, also that.
Rav Barnea asked me to take a picture of the page in the Atlas Karta that shows the shofet from each shevet and his nachala. So that's in the group now.
Yeah, that I heard.
Beautiful, beautiful.
That's good.
That's beautiful. That's very mamchish, particularly by putting it to the context of Eretz Yisrael itself and understanding, like, you know, the relationship to place, which is also difficult to us, you know, which is what Barnea works so hard on and gets so much out of, and the actual connection of the place.
Wow. I'm going to put this in my comic book.
What, the place?
Just to show on the first page when I do shelf team that this is a beautiful map to come right on the, you know,
amazing.
The pages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Sheesh. Thank you.
Mamish, amazing. Okay. So, I mean, with that, I'm just saying with that in mind, I don't know where exactly it will go, but certainly it's a change of focus a little bit, I think. And it also addresses this very painful problem. Why are shoftim, so to speak, no longer human? Why aren't they even supposed to be human? It's the weirdest thing. I mean, you know, nowadays we have cancel culture.
No way.
Acknowledge Shimshon. Okay.
In Shimshon, as I don't know, I'm speaking here really from ignorance, but it would seem, at least superficially, the most extreme personality within Tanakh. Maybe there's more that I'm just not aware of. So maybe there is a need for that because that will encompass all of the experience of Am Yisrael. Back to that Zohar that Rabbi quoted in Patterns in Time, that all experiences have to, like when the parent raises, you know, throws up his or her hands and said, that's it, I've seen it all. I mean, that's like maybe that Shimshon element present for all of Am Yisrael, Hutra Chaladorot for all time, is there to, as I don't mean as a comfort, a reassurance for, you know, a nation that thought that they had seen it all and then, you know, realizes they haven't, but just almost as a symbol for nothing is off of the spectrum of possibility.
Yeah, but remember that Yaakov Avinu thought that he was Mashiach. He can't just be nothing is off the spectrum. He's got to be an actual manifestation of the power of Yisrael. He's not like an outlier if Yaakov could think that he's Mashiach. So this whole sense that we have of his being an outlier is wrong. I mean, this is where it says, Ke'echad Shiftei Yisrael. I mean, this is where the Echad appears, is Bedavka over here.
The point where Yaakov Avinu shifts and says L'shuatzcha kibitzi Hashem in that midrash is when he sees Shimshon die, not when he sees Shimshon's misbehavior.
No, when he sees him, gamze mace.
So all of what we perceive as the misbehavior or the craziness of Shimshon is part of Yaakov's vision of Mashiach.
Right, I mean, look, Ben Koziva was also the same thing, and Rabbi Akiva thought that he was Mashiach. He was a mad Superman, mm-hmm. right? And trained all of his men. They all had to be mad Superman. I'm saying that glorious bastards. There's a reason for it. It touches some deep chord.
Why are they always dying? Why are they always, before they finish, before they actually complete their mission, they're dead and gone? It looks like
Was V'hu Yachel.
I understand, but why is V'hu Yachel? Why can't it be okay? Finish it up. You know, you're a leader.
Doesn't the same thing happen when Avram Avinu has to chase away the ayat? The reason he has to chase away the ayat is because David wanted already to come and finish up. And it was too premature. And therefore, that's what Rashi says. Avram had to chase them away. Because, again, remember, I mean, I don't know, you don't come to like so many different things, but there's this very strong pattern of iteration throughout the Torah and the Moyadim and the idea of Shemitah and Yovel and the concept of Regel is all questions of the same ideas being expressed in greater and greater power, but in greater and greater subtlety. And that takes time. That's as the Rambam explains.
I'm happy to say
there's no way to jump the gun.
No, I'm happy. Wait a second. I'm happy to say it takes time. But every time we are so close,
right,
something goes wrong.
That's exactly the point. Why is that?
Is
not yet able to be completed. That's exactly why. It looks like we're doing the right thing, and poof, this happens always. And that's the way the Medrash puts it out. It happens in my separations. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got this Adam and everything's going well, and it lasts all of 6 hours.
Okay. I heard the shoe was a lot
of shiurim like that.
But yeah, okay.
So I mean, it sounds like it's some kind of pagam in my separations. But remember, this is that unbelievable Rambam who calls that question mental illness. That's what he says. Once and for all, you've got to get over the sickness of believing that things can be rushed, which is part of the whole idea that we're talking about over here. If we're talking about a slow maturation process in which Am Yisrael itself is the equivalent, so to speak, of an individual who is growing and maturing, this is the way Chazal talk about it, that Am Yisrael were children, were adolescents, and so on. Doesn't mean every person was an adolescent. It means in terms of the development of the meta personality that leads ultimately to Malchus, you're talking about a child's level of a meta personality. Handy's falling asleep. I can't believe it. Just when we need him the most. Oh, Handy.
No, I think he's stuck. Oh, he's stuck. That's a terrible position to get stuck in.
Listen, it's better than having your mouth wide open and putting in a piece of pizza pie.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. It really is. It's a terrible, terrible.
I cannot get over that. The realization that Shimshon was in Yaakov's vision meant to be Mashiach, with everything that Shimshon did. I just don't understand that.
What aspect don't you understand? Let's try to get to the bottom of it.
I first and foremost think about how I'm going to present this to other people. Because always if that's how I make sense of things. How can I possibly present Shimshon, who's so far removed from the sensibilities of modern convention in almost every respect, right? In terms of leadership, if I were to present him as, you know, like as a maverick type of figure, then no one would be able to take that to Mashiach level. You might say, well, there's a Mashiach ben Yosef that I've always thought of as maverick. And well, I guess maybe this is the Mashiach ben Yosef that's from Rachel. Maybe that's what Yaakov is hoping for with Shimshon, that maverick. I don't know. I got to see Top Gun again.
No, that makes sense because it's specifically so sexual that Bedavka is Rachel oriented.
Right. Dan is her Bechor. He's her firstborn. She conceived of him. She brought him into existence. She calls him her son. Right. And Bunatan Li Ben. So that to me it makes more sense. Mashiach ben David.
No, that also makes sense out of the Yehuda Dan interrelationship that is so much in focus here in the Midrash. And that's the Ke'echad Shiftei Yisrael, that it's supposed to be the same as Yehuda. That actually is a very beautiful focus in terms of the two levels of Mashiach, specifically. In other words, we cannot have just a Malchus that is based on the Yehuda approach to things.
And am I correct that the Mashiach ben David, big adol, although not the specifics can't be determined, is a figure in history that is... that is much, much more of a, again, I'll use the word maverick, visionary, outlier, dreamer,
Mashiach ben military David, man.
Mashiach ben Yosef.
Oh, okay.
You know, military man, you know, someone who is not of the establishment, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
That does make sense. But nonetheless, there's still this element of Malchus in which it's incorporative, in which there's this klal for this care for klal Yisrael, as Yosef was befarnes Yisrael kalviv shabashamayim, and that you know it's the same lashon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu caring for the sheep and so on. But also remember that he was also nazir echav in both sense, and that he was also in the same way looked at as sexually overactive, in which all of the things that he was capable of doing were always focused in the same direction as Shimshon. It was very raw in that sense. That's the bonos oiles aleshur and so on. But that's directly kineged the umay sa'ilam and their vision of stardom. And how sexuality relates to stardom and things like that, in which everything is taking advantage. So it is basically a one-on-one kind of thing. We use the word in English one-on-one, which would be echad, kedeged echad, so to speak. And that, in that sense, Yisrael as an am echad, which is brought also by the Medrash, mi kamchi Yisrael, goi echad ba'aretz, also needed to take on one against one. I'm just suggesting that all of these things, obviously the most fundamental thing is the way that the Umay Sa'elam utilize those fundamental Adam issues, the competition and the sexual competition and the issues that are raised in Gan Eden, which become the mocker of our connection, which is Bris, and which is why he's constantly focusing on Bris. He's this guy is an oral, and as an oral is a piece of garbage, or the same thing with Sisra, the same thing with Dvorah. It's always a primal focus on that level. And the more that becomes part of a religious vision, separated from the primal human aspect of it, the less it means to be a Yisrael, and the less the Yisrael is going to be an Echad. The less he's going to be Adam Atem. How can he be Adam Atem if, like, that's the whole Metzias of Adam? It's ridiculous. So, yeah, what you're saying makes a heck of a lot of sense. And this is the reason why there is so much incredible sex in Shoftim. And as Rav Sacks pointed out before his death, that this is the whole theme of Bereishis is only sex. The interrelationship between what it is that the Avos are doing and what it is that the Umos are doing is constantly sexual. Why? And that's the whole way that we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the Kemais Eretz Mitzrayim, That's like the whole issue, and that's the unbelievable medrash. The sexual challenge at the time that Yisrael comes into Eretz Yisrael was the greatest, because that was the worst time in which Canaan had reached their level. And when they were in Mitzrayim, that was the worst time. These are all part of this unbelievably powerful pattern in which the idea of the Tanim and the description of Paro, and even the archaeological findings of Paro, also stressed all of these elements of sexuality. This is like the whole Metzius. And this became gradually, with Christianity, became rejected as a symbol, which was part of the rishis of Esav, that Yan Dam Saneta is the hatred of Dam Mila. And that's a rejection of the whole concept. I pretend, that's the pretense of Esav being the pig who's constantly showing how tohar he is by waving his feet. It's the lies. It's this unbelievable lies. I mean, it's nowadays Western civilization. I mean, it's like unbelievable. The hypocrisy of expecting this kind of sexual purity when all the people that are writing about it are themselves total Rishoyim. It's like unbelievable. And they pretend that their society has achieved like some kind of new darga of morality, you know, in which we could protect our children even from even knowing that there's such a thing. It's amazing.
I was just asked yesterday, how did two tzaddikim meet with a zona and negotiate with a zona? That's the opening of Sefer Yoshua.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. That was the main point, remember. They wanted to know how people are getting it up lately. That's how Chazal darshan, the low cum ruach be'ish. And so she's able to tell by the level of their erections whether they are really nervous or not. It's an unbelievable insight. Yeah, this is Rashi throwing out the reality. Of course, that's what it means. Right? Literally, that's the lashon. Can't get it up. Low cum. In English, that is considered to be vulgar. This is mamish what the Torah is talking about. It's an incredible total hypocrisy. Mamish. There's nowhere that you see it more powerfully. I mean, what's the dafim in Yevamos now about the Mion, you know, in the creation of a marriage for a 6-year-old? How are you going to protect her unless you get her involved in a relationship? Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, all right, Rabbi Osai. So look, the purely human aspect of it hopefully will provide us a new insight. And we'll see where we can go with it. Bezras Hashem. And I think it relates very much to the point that Moshe had made over there with this uniqueness of Echad, especially that medrash is really, I sent you the whole medrash. I haven't had a chance to look through it, but it's got so many different nakudas that are really, really important that relate to the things that we've spoken about. So, yeah, I should have sent it before.
Yeah, it's long. It's long. You got to read it.
What happened? Didn't we have a list of Makaris? I can't find the Makaris. I thought that originally we had put all the Makaris on the document in a special document that had Makaris for Shimshon. And I can't find it anywhere. Nobody remembers any of that? I'm so remembered that before we...
I try to collect Makaris, and if I see the...
Before we even started, I thought that I put like out a bunch of Makaris. Okay, and I was very frustrated today trying to... I wanted to add this message to the document. I couldn't find the document anywhere. So we have to start doing that. So, okay, so I put this at the end. I put a sources thing at the end of the Google. So now we have to go back and start putting everything in context. We can start seeing it all okay. Together. Maybe I'm getting mixed up with what we did for Pesel Micha. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. We made a whole list in advance of Pesel Micha Makaris. All right, everybody. Anyway, Halavaisha Niske, and a little bit of tefillah wouldn't hurt.
Thank you.
Because it's not really Biyadenu without HaKadosh Baruch Hu opening up our eyes. We're so completely blinded by culture and so on that I feel very powerfully like the need for Siyata Deshmaya here to get somewhere on it. Okay, Laila Tov, wonderful.
Laila Tov, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Laila Tov.